This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Peter King. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was fired back at New York Senator Chuck Schumer, who says the Israeli leader is an obstacle to peace and that Israel should hold new elections.
The majority of Israelis support the policies of my government. Oh. It's not a fringe government. It represents the policies supported by the majority of the people. If Senator Schumer opposes these policies, he's not opposing me. He's opposing the people of Israel.
Netanyahu appeared on CNN's State of the Union. There are reports of renewed negotiations for a pause in the fighting in Gaza.
This is Chris Livesay in Tel Aviv. The ceasefire talk showing signs of promise, namely because Hamas seems to have dropped two of its demands that Israel had found unacceptable. That's according to reports. The first, they had initially been calling for a permanent ceasefire. And the second, they had been calling for Israel to completely withdraw from the Gaza Strip.
Donald Trump's vice president says he's offended by the former president referring to Capitol riot defendants and convicted felons as hostages. Mike Pence appeared on CBS's Face the Nation.
Well, I think it's very unfortunate at a time that there are American hostages being held in Gaza that the president or any other leaders would refer to people that are moving through our justice system as hostages, and it's just unacceptable. I was there on January 6th.
Another term for Russian President Vladimir Putin has been a foregone conclusion.
Putin's re-election is very bad news for Ukraine.
Former Fordham University professor and former CBS News Moscow bureau chief Beth Noble.
President Putin can now claim he has a mandate in support of the war from his own people. In fact, I expect President Putin will be able to continue any current policy and claim that his people support it, whether it's confrontation with NATO and the West, or stepping up the crackdown on dissent at home.
2 days after a New Mexico state police officer was gunned down, law enforcement officers have caught up with his accused killer. He's in custody in Albuquerque. Bernalillo County Sheriff John Allen says a gas station clerk spotted the man this morning.
They had an eye on Mr. Smith. A foot pursuit ensued. Shots were fired. Some shots strike Smith. But Smith was then taken into custody without further incident.
What better way to celebrate St. Patrick's Day than a parade in Dublin? The parade organizers say nearly 500,000 spectators watched about 4,000 performers in Dublin. President Biden has had a busy St. Patrick's Day. He's about to hold a Shamrock Bowl ceremony with Ireland's Prime Minister at the White House. That comes just a few hours after he hosted a brunch with Catholic leaders. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A new report says Black LGBTQ plus youth are seeing more equality, but it doesn't always mean greater opportunity. Edwin J. Vieira explains.
The Human Rights Campaign reports around 82% of kids were out to someone in their immediate family. This shows a growing comfort level they have in being who they are, but the findings also indicate this doesn't always translate into acceptance and leads to concern. Ryan J. Watson, a University of Connecticut professor and researcher for the report, says a key takeaway is how Black LGBTQ plus youth face exclusion on several fronts.
Maybe their Black African-American relatives, friends, are in particularly unsupportive of them being a sexual gender minority, and so they kind of have stigma from that side. And then also the kids in this report are reporting they feel excluded by white LGBTQ youth and populations.
The report suggests parents can educate themselves about sexuality and gender identity, as well as use the name and pronouns their kids use to define themselves. The report also finds mental health is a big concern for this population. Around 59% of Black LGBTQ plus youth screened positive for depression, while close to 40% of those surveyed were diagnosed with anxiety. Watson finds these figures alarming.
We could leverage health professionals, teachers, parents, but if I were developing an intervention right now to help a particular group of youth, this to me seems like a population in dire need.
Nearly half of all Black transgender or gender expansive youth have unmet mental health needs. Surveys find accessing mental health care is a challenge for many Black or minority residents. Along with this, many are concerned about how their gender identity will affect their futures. More than 80% say they want to attend college, but almost one-third worry how being LGBTQ+ could harm their future higher education opportunities. This is Edwin J. Vieira. Support for this reporting is provided by Lumina Foundation.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, a few flurries, otherwise mostly cloudy, lows in the mid-20s. Partly sunny and 37 on your Monday. A touch warmer for Tuesday, windy with a high near 51. Sunny and windy for Wednesday with highs near 37. Snow by Thursday. Right now, it's 28.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Kicking off hour two of the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to the Earl Ingram Show, where this week Earl is joined by Alan Chavoya from the Milwaukee Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression. They discuss police brutality and the lack of accountability in the justice system.
Walk with me down memory lane. Every Monday morning, listen to the music that shaped America's future. From the Temptations to the Supremes, Marvin Gaye to the Four Tops, along with Little Stevie Wonder, Motown Mondays on The Earl Ingram Show.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, brother, brother. There's far too many of you dying.
Good morning and welcome to The Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Earl. How was your weekend?
Man, let me begin by saying, welcome to Motown Monday. We'll be talking about that a little bit later on in the show. But Calvin, so Saturday at around noon, I went to St. Patrick's Day Parade in the city of Milwaukee. Brutally cold, man. The wind was blowing at 25 miles an hour. The temperature must have been about 25. And man, a three-hour parade. It was absolutely insane.
Yeah, that sounds rough.
Yeah, and man, the women with their breasts out. Hey, man, I'm serious, man. Hey, moo-moos, little short skirts. Hey, man. And spring dresses. And I don't know how they did it, man. You know, I was dressed and I was frozen, man, by the time it ended. You know.
Yeah, I guess they got used to it from the last couple weeks.
Man, unbelievable. So I had a heck of a weekend, man. Yesterday I was at, believe it or not, are you sitting down?
Yes, I am.
An Oscar watch party, right?
How was that?
So I got invited to this Oscar watch party. And I said, well, sir, come on, man. You got to go. So I've never watched the Oscars, first off. In my life, I've never watched the Oscars. Yeah. I think I lasted about 20 minutes. I'm like, man, what am I doing here, man?
Well, you watched the Oscars for 20 minutes more than I did.
I didn't watch the Oscars. I was at the party for 20 minutes. Yeah, I'm like, man, this is, I was like putting a square
a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah. man, that was me. So, yeah, a strange, strange weekend. I'm glad it's over. And so, you know, great thing is the weather's going to be great today. But anyway, I want to welcome my guest, Mr. Alan Chavoya. He's with Milwaukee Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression. Hey, good morning to you, Alan. How you doing, man?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm doing all right. How are you?
Yeah, it's been a while, man.
Yeah. Too long.
I always enjoy having you on, man. You're very, very bright guy who's fighting battles that, you know, people don't see. You're with, again, Milwaukee Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression, which has been around almost as long as I have.
Yeah, originally founded in 1973 out of the struggle to free Angela Davis and the Black Panthers associated in the case. It's been active for quite a few decades, but unfortunately, Milwaukee, sort of, you know, like all across the U.S., the repression faced in the 80s and 90s, it sort of dwindled down, but it was reignited in 2019, and us were officially refounded in 2020, and we've been active ever since.
So let's talk a little bit about how you got involved with the organization. You're a young guy, man.
Yeah. So, you know, growing up, I grew up in an immigrant household, mixed status. I was born here. So, I was born a citizen, but my parents were born in Mexico. So a lot of questions around that, around justice for immigrants. And I saw a lot of the racism that we faced as Mexicans, and as a, you know, Chicano, and just seeing a lot of that. And so I was originally raised in that struggle for immigrant rights. But then in 2020, when I saw how, you know, Black people in America were being, you know, treated, especially in wake of the George Floyd and everything that happened before then, right, with Ferguson in 2014, right, in Milwaukee with Dontre Hamilton, and doing some of that work in college. But then in 2020, it all clicked, right, like the connection between those struggles of Latinos, of brown people and Black people, and having to bring those together more. So that's really what brought me to the Alliance, of seeing how it is that I had, like, I saw other Chicanos involved in that struggle too, and I was like, okay, we can do this together. So that really brought me there, and connecting those struggles together.
So let's talk about the law enforcement aspect of it, because there are many people who believe that, you know, law enforcement is untouchable, and you can't say anything negative about law enforcement. And so those people who are in law enforcement are sacred. You know, what's amazing to me is prior to Donald Trump, it was hands-off law enforcement. You can't say anything negative about law enforcement. But when Donald Trump became president of the United States, and what happened on January 6th, law enforcement all of a sudden became, they weren't that sacred cow anymore. Did you notice that?
You know, yes and no. Just because you're law enforcement, you're enforcing the law, quote unquote, doesn't mean you're above the law, right? But I think it's a product of design of many, many decades of different propaganda forms that we've gotten. Like, you know, you turn on any TV show, you got all these cop shows. I still remember growing up watching that show, Cops.
Yeah.
And you just assume, like, oh, everyone they treated there, you know, you treat it as reality TV. But then you realize reality TV ain't so real, right? It's all scripted. And but, you know, you get this promotion of like everything is dangerous. So even though Trump and January 6th had some, you know, repercussions for some law enforcement, it's still that narrative of like, oh, it's just a few bad apples or whatever that we've got to get rid of. But even then, we're seeing with Joe Biden and the Democrats, the amount of money that has been funneled into cops all across the U.S., all major cities have seen an increase in funding for the police.
So what do you say to people who say, Alan, don't you see all the crime going on? What do you think, if it wasn't for the police, you know, what would happen?
Yeah, well, I ask you, okay, who's here to stop the crime? Is it the cop that is now leading a chase down the south side of Milwaukee that results in a terrible crash that is likely to paralyze a man now?
Yeah, or kill innocent people.
Is that stopping a crime, or is that, you know, so we have to ask the question, how do you actually stop crime? Because I think that's where the question is, right? And that has been very much painted as the police are here to stop crime, or the police are here to solve crime. Look at the rates of stopping crime. Look at the rates of solving crime. They're at an all-time low. So it's not about just giving more money to the police and whatnot to stop crime. You have to ask, okay, why are there the kids that you're quote unquote saying are little criminals? Like I remember in Milwaukee last year, you had the Kia boys, right?
Right.
Like all the kids stealing Kia. If you go and talk to them, they'll tell you why they're not in school. They're like, well, I'm in a classroom with 50 other students and a teacher that's overworked, can't take care of us. I got to, you know, in my household, both my parents are out because they're having to work. And or maybe one of them or both were incarcerated. So these are bigger issues than just give money to the cops because the cops are going to stop crime. You got to fund schools. You got to fund parks. You got to fund recreational opportunities for the children and for people who are otherwise exposed to that lifestyle.
I've always said anybody who thinks that the answer is lock people up. We need more people. We need more cops. We need more jails. We need to lock more and more people up. The system, the system that creates the environment where young people wind up doing the things they do, if you don't fix that, you're never going to be able to have enough police or jails. So it's crazy to say we just need more and more police officers, and that's the solution.
For the past several decades, since the 70s, their budget has been steadily increasing, and it's gotten pretty darn big, almost to the point of almost 50% of the city's budget's going to law enforcement. And it's very similar in the county. I think in the county it's closer to 40%. But that's still a significant chunk of any public institution, right? That money doesn't just come out of nowhere. That's money that's taken out of other pools, right? And so in the city of Milwaukee, you know, it's close to going bankrupt. Why? Well, it's spending, you know, hundreds of millions on the police and their overtime and their pension. So much so that now the city has to, you know, increase the sales tax. But that sales tax increase that it did can only be spent on
and more police officers.
So, right.
Let's talk a little bit. Fire and Police Commission, what is it?
So they were created as a state statute. So you go to any municipality, they'll have a Fire and Police Commission, or sometimes referred to as the Police and Fire Commission, a different name. It's supposed to be a civilian oversight body. With the capacity to regulate, to some sense, policing and fire departments. And so you have the Fire and Police Commission in Milwaukee.
Which is one of the oldest and used to be one of the most powerful.
Used to be. Yeah, if we were talking a year ago, I'll tell you, okay, they have some power.
Right.
But like I was briefly mentioning about that issue with the sales tax. So Milwaukee, since it was in dire need of money, because it was going towards fiscal insolvency, which just means the city's running out of money and is going to be bankrupt. What the state officials did behind closed doors through Act 12, what became Act 12, which is a shared revenue bill, because Milwaukee, out of all the municipalities across the state, it's the one that received the least amount of its shared revenue, which is basically all the tax money collected at the end of the year, right?
Right.
Or like, oh, let's split it up. Milwaukee being the largest, the one that contributes the most, gets the least. So Milwaukee's like, we want our fair share of it, right? In that bill, it was presented as that, right? It was strictly economical, strictly about sales tax or increasing the revenue for the city, yada, yada, yada. Behind that, there were a lot of hidden aspects into those bills. One of them being the Milwaukee Fire and Police Commission can no longer have the power to create policy for the police.
Right, they were neutered.
Exactly. They were already, you know, they already had some issues. You know, we had to work through them when we created some, you know, different policies. But
so hold that thought. 844-967-2789 is Monday. And I'm so excited to have back in the studio Mr. Alan Chavoya. He's with Milwaukee Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. There's far too many of you dying. You know.
The Earl Ingram Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 8 till 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
Hi, this is Scott Trout of Cordell & Cordell. If you're a dad who is facing divorce, there are extra layers of stress that may include stereotypes and assumptions. No two situations are the same. Our legal experience and dedication prepare us for whatever legal challenges we face together. You need a partner you can count on. For more than 30 years, Cordell & Cordell has represented men in divorce.
Schedule an appointment with one of Cordell & Cordell's Milwaukee attorneys. 111 East Kilbourne Avenue, Suite 1650, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53202.
Waukesha job seekers and employers are invited to attend the Waukesha County Workforce Solutions for Your Business event on Thursday, March 28th. Doors open at 7:30 a.m. and a continental breakfast and networking event will take place from 8 to 9, followed by a Q&A and networking until 10. Any Waukesha job seekers and businesses are invited. There is no fee, but space is limited. Register ahead at business.oconomowoc.org/events or at jobcenterofwisconsin.com.
The Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Up next on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to the Maggie Dawn Show, where this week Maggie discusses the crisis in Milwaukee City and County of their public employee pensions. She dives deep into the oversights and negligence that spiraled into this problem.
Baby, don't be blue. Gonna make for you. Gonna make a pie with the heart.
It's Pie Day, which made me think of cake, which made me think of you can't have your cake and eat it too, except if you were around when Tom Amont was Milwaukee County executive and decided to spike the heck out of Milwaukee County's pension, effectively letting public employees buy additional years of service, which juices their pension up, or enticing them to work beyond their retirement date, basically by promising them an enormous bonus. The largest one in the history of Milwaukee County just paid out $2.5 million. Public servant and a $2.5 million retirement payout do not coexist together. They don't. No reasonable person can argue otherwise. Now, here's the thing. I do not blame or hold responsible or accountable the individual employees that get these benefits. Now, it is true they could waive the benefit, but most of these folks aren't trust funders, right? They're people like me and you that went to work for a really long time and served the public in some way. And these benefits were effectively promised to them. They become property rights in a pension. It's called vesting. Once you vest in a pension, which typically is triggered by some fairly lengthy time of service, 5 years, 8 years, once those benefits vest, those benefits that are promised, that calculated benefit, including a bonus payment in the case of some Milwaukee County employees, that's your property and nobody can take it from you without your consent. We got here because politicians wanted to appease a very strong union. They wanted to buy affection of their constituents. And the only reason this was able to occur is because the professionals that were hired, some public servants, some outside professionals, failed to do their job. So the office that I used to occupy and lead is the Office of Corporation Counsel. It's the general counsel's office for Milwaukee County. That office failed to raise their hand and say, wait, this is pension spiking. You don't do this because you don't know how much any of this is actually going to cost, or we don't have good estimates, because what happens if the market takes a huge dip, which occurred in 2008? We just came through that. Thanks to Joe Biden, we're now on the upswing. But when that happens, pension funds lose money because typically they're more or less kind of conservatively invested, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to get into investment management because then everybody will stop listening. You don't spike pensions. The lawyers should have known better. They should have raised their hand and said no. And if you do this, I'm going to sound the alarm and I'm going to speak publicly about it. Those sorts of professionals have to be able to have the backbone to stand up and say no. And it comes so far, an attorney's duty, that you would actually resign your job, basically in protest. Now, we may be talking about pensions here in the county, but let me tell you this. It is my belief, and it is the duty, the standard that I think all especially technical experts like lawyers and financial types that work at all levels of government, that when you see a politician or an elected official like the last president doing things that violate the Constitution, the oaths that we take, or what is our professional standard of care, it is incumbent upon us as experts and technicians in those fields to object, to tell the client or the elected official they're screwing up. You do that privately first. Then you do it publicly. Then you do it in writing. Then you do it in writing more broadly. Then you call the press. You escalate and escalate and escalate. And if they insist upon doing it, you resign your job in protest. That, my friends, is the standard of care, the duty that attaches to every single public servant. That you would resign your job in protest rather than be party to sit silently by while pension spiking happens at Milwaukee County, or when a president attempts to gut the Constitution and establish an authoritarian regime. It's all of a whole. And when little failings happen at the local level, it portends all kinds of mischief at higher levels of government. And I'm not saying that you can't make a mistake as a public servant. We all make mistakes. I've made them. But when you know, or you should know, and you fail to act to stop the bad thing from happening, that blame, that accountability is yours as well as the bad actors. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. That's why when people talk about a former Attorney General Bill Barr, oh, well, he finally came around and said Trump's bad news. Too little, too late. You are a co-conspirator. There were attorneys in my office in Milwaukee County that knew that the pension spiking was happening and did nothing. Might it be because they themselves were going to reap the benefits of the pension spiking? Then that additionally is a conflict of interest, which you should disclose and then say, I have a financial interest here. That didn't happen. And it's not just the lawyers. It's the financial experts, the budget experts. There were reams of people at Milwaukee County in just the right place to object. And in fact, during a pension board meeting, a county employee made a, frankly, lied to the pension board and said, oh, our actuary analyzed these pension spiking benefits and we're fine. And the actuary was sitting in the room, heard the lie. Now, this isn't a county employee. This was an outside professional actuary. Mercer was the actuarial company. This guy heard the lie. Now, his duty as a fiduciary to the pension plan was to raise his hand and say, no, we didn't do any analysis. What is it? You're making stuff up. But he sat there. And when he got home, he had a could have called his boss. Hey, wait a minute. This weird thing happened. He said, we analyzed this. We didn't. What do? You send a letter to the pension board. You send a letter to the county executive. You send a letter to the board of the chairperson of the county board. They had all kinds of time before the pension spiking benefits were adopted. Mercer did to raise their hand and say, no, we didn't analyze this. We don't know if you can afford this. And they didn't do it. My argument to you, and I'm going to continue to use these pension problems as a foil for this discussion, but it's not just about the pension, y'all. This shows you how when in an organization, when you have yes men and women, when you have people that won't do their duty, there's reams of people that could have stood up and stopped it. But when it's a culture of yes and you nod along, or a culture of personal loyalty, or a culture of political expedience, when reams of people fail to do their duty, bad things happen in local government, in state government, or federal government. Keep it locked. We're going to take a little bit of news. I'll be right back. We'll continue to put all of this together for y'all. I'm Maggie Dawn on this windy, rainy, wet Thursday.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays at 2.
To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Renewed talks about a ceasefire and Hamas hostage release in Gaza. Here's CBS's Chris Livesay.
Three U.S. officials told CBS News that they're now optimistic that there can be at least some kind of a pause in the fighting, temporary, albeit.
To absolutely no one's surprise, Vladimir Putin wins another term as Russia's president. The BBC's Danny Eberhard says dissident Alexei Navalny's widow showed up to vote in Germany.
Yulia Navalny queued up to vote in the Russian embassy in Berlin. She said she'd written her late husband's name on the ballot. She's accused Mr. Putin of murdering him in an Arctic jail a month ago.
St. Patrick's Day, of course, is a big day in Ireland, but if you ever had any doubt about its global impact, forget it. This parade was held in Tokyo. Savannah, Georgia has long claimed to have the largest parade in this country, and Manhattan's parade may be the oldest of 262 years. CBS News Brief. I'm Peter King.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Packers say so long to Aaron Jones. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It happened this past week after contract talks broke down. The Packers signed 26-year-old running back Josh Jacobs from the Raiders, then called 29-year-old Aaron Jones to tell him he was being released. Jones then signed the next day with the Vikings and was asked for his reaction.
It's a part of the business. You know what you sign up for. My agent had called me before all of that happened, telling me it was a possibility. So, you know, my mind was already prepared, and I just wanted to go where I felt wanted.
Josh Jacobs is now in Green Bay and talked about being Jones' replacement.
Yeah, I actually know Aaron, you know, so I already know what kind of guy he is. You know what I'm saying? A great dude, man, and obviously he's a legend around here just from what he's done in his time. I don't really consider myself coming in and, you know, like replacing what he's done. I just try to hold that standard.
That's Packers running back Josh Jacobs. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, a few flurries, otherwise mostly cloudy, lows in the mid-20s. Partly sunny and 37 on your Monday. A touch warmer for Tuesday, windy with a high near 51. Sunny and windy for Wednesday with highs near 37. Snow by Thursday. Right now, it's 28.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on The Shaw. 101.1 FM and 540 AM WAUK. And on the Civic Media app.
Are record energy costs putting a squeeze on your fixed or limited incomes? With inflation rising at record levels and incomes not keeping pace, you might be one of tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents who are struggling to survive in the blistering heat of summer or the bitter cold of winter. While you haven't asked for it, the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. No Wisconsin resident should ever have to face the challenge of living without heat or power or face homelessness. For a hand up, apply today and call 1-800-506-5596. That's 800-506-5596. Or visit www.heat.help.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weikert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Your home, your property, your decision. At Weikert Realtors Lake Point, we'll guide you every step of the way, whether you're buying or selling a home or exploring commercial property. Your dream is within reach. You'll find our realtors love what they do, and more importantly, we think it's fun helping our clients achieve their goals. Who wouldn't want to do that every day? Give me a call at 608-721-8002. Weikert Realtors Lake Point, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weikert-lakepoint.com.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Now on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to WXCO, where we hear from Chad Holmes of The Chad Holmes Show. This week, Chad welcomed to the show Carol Weiland, widow of Jason Weiland, a police officer killed 7 years ago in a Wausau area shooting. To listen to all these shows and more, download the Civic Media app at the Google Play or Apple App Store, or listen to the shows after the fact, wherever you get your podcasts. Now, here's Chad Holmes.
And welcome back. Chad Holmes with you here on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Online at bullfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. Very happy to welcome into studio Kara Weiland. And first of all, Kara, thank you for stopping on by. We had in the last hour, I was talking to you during the break, we have the North Star segment, and Clay Rice actually set us up, and I know you know Clay as well, and he kind of helped get us together, and really appreciate you stopping on by today.
Thank you for having me.
Before we go any further, because talking about North Star, well, I wanted to start because they do have a very special event coming up, and Clay had talked to me about this a couple of weeks ago, and hopefully we're going to be involved in it in some way as well, but a special tribute at the Grand Theater with music and a lot of other things going on. I imagine this is something that's very special and very exciting for you and your family.
It is. I was very excited when Clay reached out to do a tribute for Jason and his scholarship to raise money for individuals that wanted to go into criminal justice, police science, and when he had this idea of doing a tribute concert, I was so excited. Having people like North Star wanting to help facilitate that and bring the community together to put on such a huge event. I mean, this is the hugest event that we've had so far, so I'm super excited to see where this all goes and to raise the money for Jason's scholarship and, you know, just to bring the community together. Jason loved a good party, so this will be an awesome way to celebrate.
It's going to be coming on Saturday, July 13th at the Grand Theater. We're going to be talking more about that as we get closer to it. And while you're here as well, one thing that I was doing a little reading about yourself and the journey, because obviously next Friday is the anniversary, 7 years since your husband and three others lost their lives so tragically. One thing that came across is the importance of remembering. That I think that whenever we have a loss, to be able to remember it, not just within your own family, but for others who your husband and the other three touched. Could you talk a little bit about how events like this and I know you had a golf outing last year or as well, and other events and the scholarship especially. I think that's having a name scholarship where somebody goes and follows in the footsteps of what Jason did. The aspect of having these signposts that allow people to remember the man he was, even beyond the fact that he fell in the line of duty.
Right. And you know, we had three other people that day. Wonderful, amazing women who were just doing their jobs, and Jason was doing his job too. And you know, it was something that really shook our community. But our community really came together, and we really, you know, tried to support everyone involved. And especially even, you know, for our area to have this type of an event of an officer falling in the line of duty. The community really rallied around all of, like, first responders and law enforcement to show that they are appreciated, that they do care about the job that they do. And, you know, with everything that happened that day, you know, they were running towards the danger that was being, you know, on our community. And they were prepared. And I think that's an important thing, is that we continue to train our officers. We have ways like Jason's scholarship to train new people to go into this line of duty and be prepared. You know, the world's ever changing. Things are, you know, always different. Things are always happening. There's new technology of certain things, and it's always, you know, best to have our officers, you know, equipped with the best training and education that we can.
So perfect. You did mention the three ladies as well, Diane Look, Karen Barclay, and Sarah Quartzsand. And ironically, Diane Look's husband is Bob, who appears on my program every other week. Okay. And he was with me yesterday, actually. Oh. And he spoke very movingly as well. And he had nothing. And he said that I'd asked him, oh, if he had known you. And he said, not very well, but he has known you and said very nice things as well. You mentioned about how in the aftermath of March 22nd of 2017, how so many people came together, and you still remember the amount of law enforcement that came from so far away to be part of saluting your husband, Jason. One thing I wanted to ask you about is for you and your girls and your family and your close friends, obviously all that support is wonderful, but then everybody goes back to their jobs and goes back to their lives. And what were the days, the weeks, the months after that like? Because I imagine that as difficult as the aftermath is, having all those people around and having the show of love for Jason was probably fulfilling in the greatest way. But after that, maybe how difficult were maybe those quiet moments afterwards when everybody did go away?
It was a change. Obviously, this when everything happened, it was a lot of things going on. A lot of people, you know, involved with wanting to support and, you know, obviously planning the funeral and the things that happened afterwards for even planning Police Week when his name is put on the wall. So there's a kind of a lot that goes on in the beginning and then it does taper off. I never knew that silence could be so deafening just because there, you know, you don't have that. For me, I didn't have that voice in the evening to someone to talk to. Obviously, you know, me and the girls, but you didn't have your partner to kind of rewind from the day and kind of go over your day. So the silence was loud. But, you know, I have a great group of people that I was able to reach out to. I mean, I still do. You know, we've met a lot of people even across the United States that they've done runs and running, you know, in honor of Jason. We have the Police Unity Tour that ride every year in honor of Jason and other fallen officers. And so I stay really involved in that. And, you know, just, you know, being in touch with those people on a regular basis helps, you know. And I always love times when we can, you know, I meet up with people that Jason worked with and they have a story, you know, or even old classmates and things, you know, and it's great for the girls to hear those things too. You know, and I love, you know, those random things when people just pop up and, you know, you have that conversation and those funny stories, because Jason usually had a nickname for everybody. And he loved the camaraderie about police work, and he loved, you know, being able to help other officers grow in within their field. And, you know, would had every his phone was never off. You know, he looked forward to those 2 a.m. phone calls if somebody had a question, and, you know, he was able to answer or get the answer for them. That's what he really loved about his job. And it's nice to when people remember that and they tell you those stories or how much it meant that he, like, helped with something, or even meeting the people in the public that he, you know, would have had come in contact with. You know, even the people that he arrested actually had very nice things to say about him. And it's fun. It's nice to know that he had an impact on the community, even with the people that he was arresting, that he made an impression on them that, you know, they remember.
For folks who don't know exactly what his job was, what was his job for people to learn? Because so often you just hear the basics, the outline of the story.
Yep.
What was maybe the job that he obviously loved immensely?
Well, he was a detective, but he obviously started in patrol. And for a short stint, he worked with the Special Investigations Unit with basically a task force with other agencies. And he really liked that, coordinating with the other officers from different agencies and working with them. And, you know, in the end, as a detective, he did everything from financial crimes to property crimes to, you know, the person that walked in and had a complaint and, you know, follow up on. And I think he always really gave people the attention that they needed in those situations. And even when he was arresting someone, I think he was always respectful and, you know, was always willing to have that respect to that person that he was dealing with. And I think that's one of the things that when people tell me stories about him, even the people that he's, you know, had come in contact with, that they were always, you know, he was a good guy, you know, he was, and they knew he was doing his job. And it's one of the, you know, I don't think an officer's job ever, they're never off the clock. You know, there's phone calls come in, they have to come in, you know, they have to answer that call. You know, there's always something going on. And even when you're out in public with your family, you're still watching what's going around you. You're still basically always on. Mm-hmm. And, could be long days. You know, there was, especially when he was in the task force, there was days where, you know, we may didn't only saw him, you know, he'd come home, the girls would already be sleeping. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was just kind of that constant. You were, when things were happening, you had to be ready. So it's, you know, for the people that are in law enforcement, first responders, all those people, I mean, they truly give their life, even on a daily basis, to serve their community. And I think it's obviously a very trying time sometimes for, you know, because you're just always on.
We're talking to Carol Weiland again, wife of Detective Jason Weiland, as we come up on, again, a sad anniversary next week of one of the, again, really tough times in our community, the Central Wisconsin community, back in 2017. Something you just said in your last answer, you said, when you hear people say he was a good guy, I imagine there's nothing that makes your heart go bigger, because beyond everything as human beings, it's what's at the core. And it sounds like people saw what was at the core of your husband, right?
Yes. He always had a smile on his face, you know, and it was one of those things where he loved to, you know, he loved the camaraderie, he loved to engage, he loved to, you know, make people, the newer people coming to the department. He was a training officer for a while, and he loved kind of getting them connected and, you know, having those conversations, getting to know them, you know, kind of figuring out how they learned, or, you know, about their family, and just kind of, you know, show them the ropes. And always had a way of making people laugh, you know, making them feel, you know, important. Or he always would call me charismatic because of my name, but he was the charismatic one. He was the one that, when, you know, people would gravitate to in the room, because he always had a good story. He could tell good jokes, and just always made everyone feel a part of whatever we were doing.
What drove him to be a police officer? Because when you talk about him and the qualities he had in terms of, you know, the skills, those could have gone in many different ways. Could have been very good in probably a number of different ways. When you obviously knew him as intimately as anybody, what was it that ultimately said, this is where I want to serve, even with the dangerous aspects of it?
He always told me he wanted to go into the military and be military police, and I guess he was too short. So I think for him, the next thing was, you know, if I can't get into the military and do what I want to do through there, I really want to get into law enforcement. I want to serve my community somehow, and I want to, you know, be able to help people. And I want, you know, and he's was the type of person that wanted to know and would get the answer, and just was very diligent about his job. He loved following his cases through the end. He would, you know, he would arrest somebody and he would, you know, refer them for charges, and then he'd be following up the DA's office to see, you know, where are you going to be charging this guy? What's happening with the case? You know, he was very diligent about all of the things that he did, because he wanted to make, you know, especially victims feel whole again, and he wanted to hold people accountable. But he really wanted to make our community a good place for our girls to grow up, a safe place for our girls to grow up. And he felt that by being a police officer, he could contribute that way.
We're going to come back in just over a minute, talk more with Kara Weiland here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. The remedy to cure this old heart of mine, I can dream about.
The Chad Holmes Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WXCO weekday mornings from 8 until 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Most of us can agree we should have the freedom to make our own medical decisions. Politicians should have no role at all, but not California mega millionaire Eric Hovde. Hovde said, "I am totally opposed to abortion, and I'm 100% pro-life." And he supported overturning Roe v. Wade, the court case that protected abortion rights. Hovde's been supported by Wisconsin Right to Life, an extreme anti-abortion group that supports banning abortion, even in cases of rape and incest, and threatens doctors and nurses with criminal charges for providing abortion care. With views like that, Hovde could be a crucial vote in favor of a national abortion ban, letting politicians decide what's right for women. Call Eric Hovde at his California office at 714-730-4444. Tell him his position on abortion is dangerous for Wisconsin women. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
This is The Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Closing out this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we go to the John and Gordy Show from the Civic Media headquarters in Madison. This week, John and Gordy welcome former news reporter and congressman Scott Klug to the show to discuss government spending and independent candidates and voters in this election year.
Radio WMDX, 92.7 FM at 1580 AM and all over the social media dial and podcasts on Spotify. If you'd like to re-listen to the program or listen to it for the very first time while you're at work, ignoring everybody in the next cubicle. All right.
Okay.
We've got Scott Klug as our special guest today, and you have a question that you want to ask?
I do. Here's something that never gets brought up, and I'm going to bring it up with Scott right now. What about military spending? Nobody talks about it. It's like a third rail. We can't cut military spending because there's a lot of money going to the Pentagon. We're the policemen of the world. We got to have more military spending than any country in the world. Can we not touch that somehow? Would that not help this deficit? Nobody talks about it. Why don't they talk about it, Scott?
I disagree, and I won't know the exact parameters of that. But for a while, as part of one of the budget agreements, I think when Obama was in office, they actually had a cap on the percentage of increase for military spending. I think right at this point, I think we've got to look at what's going on in Europe and sort of catch our breath. And the TikTok fight with the Chinese, I think, will show you what we're up against on the other side of the world. I think we need to keep a reasonable amount of military spending. But I think, like anything else, I don't have any objections at looking at it. You know, lots of times it's driven as much by defense contractors as it is by the military itself. And so I think we should look at all those programs with some caution.
So what about the Republicans not helping to fund Ukraine when they really need it now?
Well, I'm on the Republican side that favors Ukraine. I just signed a letter with 40 other former members encouraging them to spend the money.
All right. Okay.
Sounds I don't good. Think it's the time to pull back. Now, I'm not a Trump fan, and I'm not a Biden fan. I'm not a Trump fan in part because I think he's got the world's most bizarre view of world affairs. Mm-hmm. But he was right on one thing. Was that our NATO allies had not paid their fair share for decades. And Angela Merkel, who was once held about as this sort of great champion of European reform, and she'd build peace and structure through trade deals. I think, when was the last time you saw Angela Merkel anywhere? Since the tanks rolled across the Ukraine border, she's been nowhere to be found.
Well, I understand
so,
that.
So I think Trump was right. And I hope the Biden administration takes the same position that the Europeans have to start carrying their own weight. And you know where you'll see them do it? In places like Sweden and Finland, because it's a real threat for them. And in places like Poland and Lithuania, where the next target points are going to be. And Putin is just the bad guy. You know, there's no sugarcoating it. And
there is
back
no
to my the former president. I don't understand his fascination with him.
There is no big pot of money that the European countries pour their money into. It's, you know, individually they put money into their security, and they are keeping up, and they have been doing the job. And it isn't something that we need to hold the line on. It's an excuse to oppose NATO, basically, and just to isolate ourselves from these countries. And we're just going to create a worse atmosphere, more conflict in Europe than I don't know, you know, by not doing anything at all.
No, the fact is, though, we can have our differences of opinions. We can't have differences of facts, John, you know that, is that the Europeans were supposed to spend 2% on defense. And the only people who really did it over the last 15 years was Poland.
Well, you can go back 15 years, but currently they are. Currently they are.
Well, they are now, but they hadn't done it. That's the point.
All right, so that is no longer an argument, and it's still being used as an argument.
You're conflating two things. You asked me if I support Ukraine and funding for it. I said yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine.
I'll talk about that till the cows come home.
All right.
It doesn't change the fact that the Europeans are in scramble mode because they didn't spend what they said they'd spend. I mean, none of those guys have got anything. You know, the only country that spent, you know, every time the Europeans say we're going to give aid somewhere in the world, you know whose airplanes they use? Ours, because they don't have anybody who can deliver supplies anywhere in the world, and they're paying the price for it now.
Okay, and you brought up Medicare and Social Security. Each and every taxpayer pays for that. That isn't something the government is paying. We pay into that fund. And the only thing that isn't really paid for by taxpayers is Medicaid. That the federal government does pitch in, and it helps a lot of senior citizens who can't afford to live in a senior care center because they've run out of money. And that's what Medicaid is used for in regards to that. So this is something we can reform those programs.
Here are the facts. The Social Security and the Medicare Trust Fund are both out of money in the next 10 years, period.
Yes.
That's a fact.
We have to fix them, yes.
And that's what I said. You've got to fix them.
But it isn't something that is on our bill. It isn't some money that we owe. It's not part of the budget. It's there. It's money that's there. We just need to reinforce it, increase the tax, the payroll tax, probably.
You have to change the parameters. And, you know, I just had this conversation with somebody who was talking about doing something with AARP. And I said, you know, the single largest obstacle to significant Medicare and Social Security reform in Washington is AARP. Because they'll tell people every time that anybody talks about trying to figure out a way to make the program solvent, they suddenly scream and say that your grandmother, who's 91 years old and living in a one-bedroom flat in Porter's, is not going to have money. The fact is, it's just raw arithmetic.
Let me jump in here. We just got a couple of minutes left, Scott. I want to get your take in the last 2 minutes here on the Eric Hovde, Tammy Baldwin race. What are your thoughts?
I think it'll be razor thin because they're always razor thin. You know, we're a state that's a ticket splitting state, right? In 2022, ticket splitting, which I think is a healthy signal of people picking candidates, not just pulling out a lever, broke out all around the country. Split governor and senator in Vermont, in Georgia, New Hampshire, Wisconsin, Kansas, Nevada. So when you look at the race, the question is going to be, will it just be a factor where whoever wins the presidency is who gets elected senator, which is usually what tends to happen in presidential years. The question for Tammy is, if Biden would lose, could she outperform it? Or for the flip, could Hovde outpoll Trump? So the answer is, it'll be whatever it is, it's going to be 30,000 votes that separates them.
Scott, we are all out of time. We appreciate you being with us. Always a good time to talk to you and get caught up. And
we had a few extra questions, you know, TikTok.
You guys can talk after the show.
We're good.
So John, you know, come visit me. You can't see the middle from how far left you are. So it's nice to have you visit my universe.
Yes.
Lost in the Middle podcast.
It was
Scott
a wonderful Kluge. Trip.
Thank you for joining us. We are all out of time. Thank you for being with us. John and Gordy will be back bright and early tomorrow morning, Friday, with Rocker.
That's right.
We'll preview what's happening on Max Inc. Thanks to everybody.
And our guest appearance.
Yes.
This weekend.
Have a great day. So long. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, guys. As we were saying, let the sun shine. It's the John and Gordy Show.
The John and Gordy Show. Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Monday on Matt Nair on Air, political consultant Joseph Hickey joins us. Maggie Dawn is here as well, and we go beyond the cheese with mushrooms. Join us.
It seems like the cost of everything is going up, so it's nice to save a little dough when you can, especially for something you love to eat every day. Before I go grocery shopping, I print out a coupon for a dollar off any Country Hearth, Village Hearth, or Artisan Hearth bread product. My favorite is Dakota Style 12 grain. My wife's breakfast go-to is a toasted Village Hearth English muffin. We can save a buck on each. Go to countryhearthbreads.com/coupons and print one or two out before your next shopping trip. And don't forget, Country Hearth, Village Hearth, and Artisan Hearth bread products are baked locally and delivered fresh daily.
You are listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Peter K.